Sarah, the Center for Advanced Innovation. And this podcast is Dragons, Gazelles, and Unicorns. Today is going to be very special. I'm thrilled to have Sheldon Himmelfarb on the podcast today. Sheldon is the president and CEO of Peace Tech Lab and formerly led the technology practice at the Corporate Executive Board. He also is an award-winning filmmaker and a prolific author in peace building. So Sheldon, I'm really thrilled to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining.
Rosemary, it is such a pleasure to be here because I am such a huge fan of the work you guys are doing in the center.
Thank you.
I really am. So it's a real joy to be here.
Well, I know that you're going to provide a lot of great insights today to the listeners. So I'm very, very excited. I'd love to learn a little bit more about your background. You have such a wide variety of different skill sets and relationships. Could you give us a little bit of an overview of your journey?
I mean, I hope we got a lot of time, Rosemary, since I've been doing this since like the Mesozoic era. when I think about my career, it kind of breaks up into decades, if you will. Once I finished my PhD, I went immediately into working in the United States Senate in the foreign policy arena. So I really spent most of the 80s doing foreign affairs. Then I spent most of the 90s in the media sphere through a combination of documentary filmmaking, where I made films for PBS and for History Channel and mostly British television, and also doing a lot of writing at the time. That period also brought me into conflict zones. I was doing a lot of filmmaking around social issues, around the death penalty in the United States, around the bombing of the Marine barracks in Beirut, and then topics like that. So I also started to work at a nonprofit organization called Search for Common Ground, where I became the head of their media wing, and then really got my first exposure to designing media programs for peace building. Rosemary, that was kind of the technology at the time, right? A tech in the 90s was, what can you do with TV? What can you do with radio? And by the way, we used to sit around going, I know there's something we can be doing with that fax machine. Yeah. And in fact, to be honestly, the fax machine did become critical in the 90s when I was working in Bosnia, when they shut down TV and they shut down radio and they shut down a lot of the media sector, the fax machine was how people were getting the news out to the rest of the world about what was going on in Sarajevo. So that was the 90s. I was really in kind of the media sphere, both in filmmaking for commercial and public sector channels, as well as in the conflict area. And then, you know, at the end of the 90s, of course, we all got drawn into the exciting internet revolution there. And so I spent most of the first decade of the 2000s. First, I was working at an internet startup. So I was, believe it or not, involved in things as exciting as one of the earliest versions of online dating, Rosemary. Where the startup that I was managing, one of its properties was Romeo and Juliet.
That's hilarious.
So that was, you know, sucked into kind of the internet boom. But then, as we all know, the internet bust happened. And our company, like so many other internet companies at the start of the 2000s, went under. And I moved into a wonderful company called the Corporate Executive Board, where I had the good fortune to be working with the technology leaders in Fortune 500 companies. So I really had that decade was about tech startups and then tech Fortune 500 companies. How do you manage a globally distributed IT department? So I really got a lot of great experience. And then, you know, at the end of that decade, USIP, the United States Institute of Peace, came a calling, I should say. They were had the foresight of wanting to double down. This is a US government funded agency, but a very interesting agency. It's technically independent of the USG, although its funding comes from the USG. But its charter refers to it as an independent organization. And they had the foresight of wanting to expand their commitment to using media and technology in peace building. And that's when they knew me from the work that I had done in the 90s. I had actually received a grant from them to be working in Bosnia on radio programming. And they knew that I'd been in the tech field for a decade, and they asked me if I wanted to help them build centers of innovation at the US Institute of Peace in figuring out how we can use technology for peace building. It was really interesting, Rosemary. It was really interesting because I was moving from the private sector, right, where I was working with Fortune 500 companies. And the investment there in tech was amazing, was overwhelming. I mean, literally, I went into the company where it had a full-time social media monitoring center to around Gatorade. Like making sure Gatorade knew every time somebody was talking about it online in social media. I go from there to the US Institute of Peace, where I'm working in conflict countries, and you have no idea in some of these places. Like we're working in Burundi, you have no idea what's happening on the other side of Bujumbura, let alone on the other side of the planet. So, right, I'm going from the private sector where we are really figuring out how to use technology to keep your finger on the pulse all over the world, mm-hmm. to the peace building sector, where it's way, way, way behind the curve. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of exciting opportunities to kind of bring these new tools into the conflict resolution, the conflict zones, the peace building space. And that's, and for me, the other really gratifying part of that, Rosemary, was I had learned from my work on social issues in the 90s that it was such an honor and so gratifying to work with incredibly courageous people in these places, mm-hmm. who were, you know, tackling corruption, who were tackling gender violence, who were tackling misinformation in those days, mm-hmm. and then to be able to work with those folks and to try to help them do more, better, faster using tech. So when USIP gave me the opportunity to go back to that kind of work and double down on it around 2008, 2009, I jumped at the chance and have not looked back since. That's really what I've been doing.
That's great. Well, so for the listeners, can you describe what a conflict zone is?
Yeah, you know, it's a really excellent a question, because there really is not clarity in anyone's mind. There's no clarity around what constitutes a conflict zone. That's something I've certainly learned. But you can look to things like fragile states indices. Mm-hmm. In order to get a sense of where, or even the Global Peace Index produced by the Institute of Economics and Peace, where is there violent conflict that is happening at levels that are really disrupting everyday existence, stability, security, and prosperity. That's how I would really define it. But you know what? It really depends on the countries, because some countries are in conflict 1 year and not the next. Some countries are considered conflict zones 1 year and not the next. We're not hearing, for example, today you don't hear almost anything any longer about what's going on in Bosnia, which of course was the site of just horrible violence in the 90s and early 2000s.
So you are very eloquent when you talk about what causes conflict. We've had this conversation before. Could you maybe describe some of the root causes of conflict?
Yeah, and I think that's important that we don't, the opposite of conflict, right, is the peace building field. And I think it's really important because most people have, or a lot of people, I should say, have this idea of peace as this soft and, you know, fuzzy Woodstock-like word. But in point of fact, conflict, this disruption that I'm talking about, and the peace that you want to see, is really a set of conditions, right? There's really five end states that are required for stability and security. So you need to have sustainable economy. You need to have rule of law. You need to have security. You need to have social well-being, and you need to have governance. Those things have to be operating in concert in order to really build a lasting peace.
So could you describe more the rule of law?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you have in so many places, from Afghanistan to Africa, you have the justice being meted out, not by a recognized court system, but you have justice being meted out either by, you know, at the end of a barrel of a gun, a feudal warlord, a chief, any number of things, which it does provide an element of rule of law. And in fact, it's very important that when you try to move to a systematic rule of law, that you take account of those local cultures and how it works, but it can't be arbitrarily meted out by an individual. It's really got to be a systemic approach. That's really what rule of law represents.
So you were talking, you know, it's really interesting. You and I have a similar background in that, you know, I went from IBM, you know, doing strategy for all these huge companies and traveling all around the world to drive growth strategy for the Fortune 100s, and then moving into, you know, creating my company. And it's quite a big change, but fantastic experience. You said you never looked back, but how did the transition go?
Well, my transition kind of was in two stages, if you will. So there I was at the, working at the corporate executive board, working with Fortune 500 companies, and then went to the UNS Institute of Peace, which was a government funded agency. So there was a lot of infrastructure there, and it was a decent sized organization. You can imagine, move from private sector to government. But the biggest change has been now, and I didn't mention this in the evolution of my career, which is almost 7 years ago now, we suggested to the United States Institute of Peace that they spin out the Peace Tech Lab, of which I am the CEO, that they spin us out as an independent nonprofit organization And as you know, working in a nonprofit is it's got its own set of challenges and rewards. So that's been a big change, huge change when I think of, you know, having worked back there in a 3,000 person organization at the corporate executive board and now moved to this small startup. But it's also exciting. It's hugely gratifying because we are still doing exactly what I said earlier. The heart and soul of our work at the Peace Tech Lab to expand and improve the use of technology in peace building is working with some of the most courageous people in the world in local environments, whether it is Mumbai, India, where we're working with organizations that were trying to deal with gender violence, whether it's been in Iraq, where we have worked with numerous organizations that were trying to improve transparency, accountability in government, or whether it was in, most recently, we were in Kazakhstan. These are incredibly courageous people working at a local level, and we are helping them to do more, better, faster of that courageous work they're already doing.
Can you give us an example of one of the, you know, how you helped some of these organizations? What are they doing to peace building?
Yeah, I know. I want to make it really concrete because I think it's important to folks to understand. And I will say to you, there's about a bazillion incarnations these days of people figuring out how they can use technology for peace building purposes. But let me just give you, I'm gonna give you two examples. One, which is the work that we did in Kenya, and the Peace Tech Lab now has an office in Nairobi. But a couple of years ago, we were working on preventing election violence in Kenya. Mm-hmm. And what we did was work with a consortium of other organizations at the time to create a network of people who were able to be an early warning system. Yeah. They were able to text us, to phone us, using their cell phones. They were able to go on social media that we were monitoring in order to raise the alarm when it looked like trouble could be brewing. The previous presidential election in Kenya, over 2,000 lives had been lost. We set up this network of kind of spotters, if you will, or early warning system in some of the most violent counties in Kenya. And we did what we called peace texting. And then we worked with local organizations in Kenya that when we would receive this information, they would help to validate it, verify it, and go out and interrupt the possibility of the violence escalating. Mm. So that was a way of using cell phones, social media, text messaging in order to save lives. And you see in that election that a lot of less lives were lost. And I am absolutely certain that the efforts of many of us, many organizations working to leverage the power of tech for early warning and early action was a key component of that. Another place where we have worked is in helping entrepreneurial companies get started. We worked with a company that was built a system for detecting missiles, for tracking missiles when they were fired. You have about 7 to 10 minutes before the missiles land, and you can send out a warning over social media, over text messaging, over a variety of networks, email, to people to get out of the way. Mm-hmm. And that was an extremely important startup that we had coming through our Peace Tech Accelerator. And in fact, it continues to do some great work today in some of the most dangerous places in the world.
And we've been privileged to have one of your companies that you formed through your accelerator program, Andrew Mack, come into our accelerator program. So we're looking forward to continuing to help your entrepreneurs as well. Hopefully they can be raising money on the new
platform. Yeah, Andrew's done some great work. His company is trying to, you know, really leverage, you know, take the Uber kind of model and take it into places like Colombia, where farmers are struggling to get their products to market. How do you take advantage of spare space in the trucking system? And you know, you ask yourself, wait, how is that peace building? How is that, how is peer-to-peer sharing of empty space in trucks, making trucking more efficient? How's that not just greater profits? But people don't realize how critical to the peace agreements that have been signed in Colombia, how critical it is to give the ex-combatants a way of making a living. Mm-hmm. Economic development is absolutely vital. About over 50% by some measures of peace agreements unravel within the first 5 years of being signed. And economic opportunity for ex-combatants is a critical factor in sustaining those agreements. So, you know, enabling a more efficient marketplace, getting products, farmers getting their product to market is vital in that Colombia environment. So I'm really excited that you're working with him. I'm really glad to hear that, Rosemary. I didn't know that. Really excited to hear that.
I'm hoping he's going to be offered on the Ignite Social Impact platform, the new product equity platform that we've developed. You know, you always talk about food insecurities and financial insecurities. And you know, another thing that I think Andrew's doing a great job of is trying to remedy some of that as well. So could you just provide a little bit more information about Peace Tech Lab?
Yeah, so I'm my favorite topic. no, we've got some really exciting programs going on right now that I'm happy to tell you about, because this has been, you know, it's been a interesting year for all of us, right? We're an international organization. A lot of our flagship work has been in going abroad into conflict countries, training these courageous people on tech tools, tech strategies. But we're locked down, can't do that. So we have really spent this year focusing on a couple of interesting new initiatives. One is our data work. We've expanded our investment in our data work and launched something called the COVID-19 Violence Tracker. So we are trying to capture the incidence of violence that are related to the virus itself, kind of separate those out from violence that you normally see every year, and understand the relationship between this virus and the violence that it has begotten. But that's not just of value to understanding COVID-related violence. We're essentially building the data engine to allow us to understand other causes of violence. We will be able to take a lot of what we're learning here and try to understand how can we monitor and understand the causes of gender violence? How can we monitor and understand the causes of violence related to resource scarcity or economic insecurity, those things? So we've got the COVID-19 violence tracker this year. We have virtualized some of our training programs. So we are working in We're still going to be doing our training in Brazil all this year, and we're hoping Uzbekistan, and we believe that that, and those will be entirely virtual trainings. But Rosemary, we were here in the United States, and we're watching, of course, social, the George Floyd killing, Breonna Taylor and others, and thinking we must take some of the lessons that we have learned in working on these issues of social justice abroad. How can we bring them to the United States and be of some value here? So we thought we would be doing some of this in person, but in fact, we've started a 15 city initiative, which is starting out called the Road to Equal Justice. And we started out in Baltimore, and we worked with 39, I believe is the final count, 39 local organizations to design a technology training program, if you will, that would help the organizations working on racial justice in Baltimore to up their game. And we had some assistance there from Black Lives Matters, from one, from DeRay McKesson, from Campaign Zero, from Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, from a lot of local organizations. And so the lab is now, for the first time in our 7-year history, we are now working in the United States. And it's really been gratifying for all of us because we're getting inspired again by the people we're working with at the local level here. So that's our tech training that has been virtualized and pivoted towards a kind of a domestic focus for this year. We continue to focus and expand our work in on online hate speech. If you go to our website, you will see that we have created a number of lexicons that kind of break the code of what online hate speech looks like in countries from South Africa, Nigeria, Yemen, Libya, some very tough places we've been working. And now we will be rolling out a lexicon on hate speech in Ethiopia, in the Central African Republic. And again, our goal is to better understand the relationship between this online hate speech. What does it look like? How does it manifest? How does it translate into online violence? But not as a research project, Rosemary. We're creating a hate speech network, a network of organizations that we are able to give these lexicons to, so that they can do the work in country, training their own people, training other organizations. This is what hate speech, you know, because it's often masked, it's often in code. We saw that in South Sudan, it was being cloaked in the use of a telecom's name when they were using the word MTN, which was a leading telco in the country, and organizations were saying, have any MTN on that bus in code to try to identify other tribes that they wanted to demonize and they wanted to attack. And so understanding this code has been quite important in trying to arm the local organizations with the information they need to prevent the violence in country. So that's another flagship program of ours, is our hate speech program. And I guess I would be remiss if I didn't end the work of this year by talking about our upcoming international peace honors. Is this a chance for me to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah, it's been a tough year for, you know, so many folks. And we thought it was a chance to also take some time to celebrate and recognize the work of these amazing people that we have the good fortune of partnering with around the world. And especially folks that have been leaders in using media, technology, and data to promote peace building. So on January the 17th at 8 p.m., our first inaugural International Peace Honors will be streamed on YouTube Live, YouTube Music. You won't believe some of the great performances that we will have. And we are going to be honoring people like Vint Cerf, you know, the co-father of the internet, who has really devoted his entire life to figuring out how to use technology for social good. We are going to be giving an award to Dr. Anthony Fauci, and that will be presented to him by President Jimmy Carter, who himself is, of course, legendary in peace building. And at the Carter Center, they have been working on both peace and global health issues. And they understand better than anyone that intersection between global health and peace. So we'll be honoring Dr. Fauci. We will be honoring Opal Tometi, the co-founder of Black Lives Matters, who also was the pioneer in their social media strategy. We will be honoring Ricky Martin, who people know him as a great musician and pop star, but he has also been a great humanitarian. And he has showed us the power of using social media to support social good, social causes. And then we'll be honoring Amazonian Chief Rayoni, who has also been a pioneer in the use, in understanding environmental issues and safeguarding the rights of indigenous groups. And to help honor Chief Rayoni, Sting will be presenting that award. And also we'll hear some of his music. So it's going to be an incredible evening of performances of world leaders. And then we will also put the spotlight on some of the local organizations, the local peace builders that we work with every day around the world. And I got to tell you, I cannot wait for this event.
Yes. And we'll put the link to all the information on this wonderful gala on LinkedIn and also on the YouTube channel here, International Peace Honors. It's going to be epic for sure. I can't wait to participate in that. And you know, you mentioned the hate speech platform that you have, the COVID-19 violence tracker, the Road to Social Justice program, the virtual training program that you are going to be launching. well, you have launched in the past, and you're going to potentially be pursuing that again?
Yeah. I'm sorry, pursuing which one?
Your accelerator program?
Oh, yeah. We are. So yes, we are excited. We're hoping to continue our work, which is supporting entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. supporting peace tech entrepreneurs in particular, organizations that are doing this great work and are honestly figuring out how they marry the double bottom line, peace with profits. That's been a real joy for us. We take this word, Rosemary, we take this word lab in our title very seriously. And we're always trying to think of how we can find new, better ways to leverage. You know, tech disrupts everything. So for example, the other thing we're excited about in 2021 is we are excited to be incubating several programs aimed at the Middle East region, because we've got some outstanding funder support for innovating in the use of tech for peace building there, places like Iraq, where we have done a lot of training in the past, elsewhere, such as Lebanon. Lebanon is going through such turbulent times, and with change comes opportunity. And again, courageous people in Lebanon have recognized this, and we are working right now with them to try to design some great programs that I look forward to talking with you about in the future.
How do people find out more about these different programs? Can they just go to your website, or do you have a suggestion?
Yeah. So definitely please go to peacetechlab.org and look at the programs there. You'll be able to see a lot of a really interesting and exciting programs that have spanned the last couple of years. But also, I'm glad you mentioned before the website for the International Peace Honors, because we have a dedicated website for that event. And you know what, Rosemary? People need to join us. Go register at internationalpeacehonors.org or internationalpeacehonors.com. Go register, because in that event, you will learn so much about the programs that we've got going on, interspersed with tons of great entertainment. So those are the ways I'd say: going to the Peace Tech Lab website, peacetechlab.org, going to the internationalpeacehonors.org.com websites, and also, of course, being there for the event itself.
So what would you recommend to the budding entrepreneurs that you come in contact with that are working on tech for peace? Any insights?
You know what? Well, tech for peace. I guess your first piece of that, I want to make sure I catch right there. What do I advise entrepreneurs? And you know, people think about entrepreneurship as I'm going to build that next great company. I'm going to build it fast. I'm going to innovate, and I'm going to make a ton of money. And I would just say to people, I run into those folks all the time who have been successful at building companies. And what they want to do now is come work with us in the Peace Tech Lab, because social entrepreneurship is what they're figuring out as being incredibly gratifying. So my advice to entrepreneurs is be thinking always about what social good you can be delivering with your incredibly innovative entrepreneurial skills, because it's, you know, there's sky's the limit. And not only that, I think that's where the private sector has been moving as well, right? Remind me, it was the CEO, of BlackRock who gave the speech a couple of years ago that said, we're no longer going to just invest in companies that deliver us a lot of profit. We are always going to be looking at the social good that they're delivering. That's the way of the future. So my advice to entrepreneurs is to double down on social entrepreneurship. You can make money, and you can have this really important meaning in your life that comes with that double bottom line.
And I'll mention this again, and I mentioned it earlier, we have just formally launched Ignite Social Impact. It's ignitesocialimpact.com, which is a platform for companies that want that are doing work in the impact area, social impact area, to raise up to $5 million and for impact investing. So both accredited and non-accredited investors can come onto the platform and put money into these budding entrepreneurs that really do the double bottom line. They are interested in social impact, and they are interested in making some money. You know,
it is so great that you're doing that, because of course, you know, like you need that fuel, you need that jet fuel of the capital to help build these organizations out. And it's one thing to go to the great foundations of the world, to go to, you know, looking for grants from government grants, but there's so much more money in the private sector that can be deployed in this fashion. And you are a real pioneer, Rosemary.
Thank you.
So, no, it's really important what you're doing. And I do think it's the way of the future. I'm convinced of it. Good on you. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I mean, we really want to democratize impact investing. I mean, if you have $100, you can put $100 into a company. If you have more, you can put more into a company. But you don't have to be an accredited investor. So I hope that we can partner on that with the new companies we have coming out, and they can be raising some money on the platform. So I have go ahead.
No, that's...
I have a couple of personal questions.
Uh-oh.
When everything opens up, where are you going to go first?
Oh God, that's a really, really excellent question, because I will have the pressure, I'm sure, from my wife and family. My kids are in New York. I will have the pressure that we travel, do some of that, you know, personal travel that we all miss doing because we've been really battened down.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I may be the craziest person in the world. I've been saying to my wife, I have got to get over to I'm dying to go out to our office in Kenya again. I am dying to go see, we've got some great partners at Peace Tech Lab Netherlands.
Wow.
Cool. And we have these terrific programs. This year we're going to be working in Brazil, Uzbekistan. I want to be there for those trainings. But, you know, I'm also like incredibly pumped to be able to work in the United States with this 15 city initiative. I think the first half a dozen will probably all be remote training, but I think the second dozen or so of these will be in different cities around the United States, and traveling to those cities to work with the local organizations who are doing great work in social justice will be a big draw. So I don't know. I can't tell you which one I'm going to go to first, but there's no shortage of things that I want to be doing to get out and start meeting people in person on this journey.
Yeah, it's amazing. If anyone had ever told me that I would spend more than 6 months without traveling, I would never believe them. No way. I would have said, "Are you out of your mind?" You know, it's crazy going from, you know, the what I was doing at IBM, three countries a week to nothing.
Yeah, and you know, Rosemary, we call our training program Peace Tech Exchanges, and we were very deliberate in using that word because we weren't coming to train without always leaving enriched by it, right?
Yeah.
We always learned so much. So that's the piece. I got to get out there. Our team, everybody's dying to be working at the local level again. We get so much more than we are able to give in that process. Mm. And so we really, really need to have that firsthand experience of, you know, of working in Nigeria again, or in South Sudan. You know, I forgot to mention some of the media work that the lab has been doing. And I'm very remiss in that, because we're in our fifth season of something called Sawa Shabab, which is a radio drama that we've been producing for South Sudanese, both in country, and over a million have left to flee the war and are in refugee camps all over Africa.
Wow.
We've been producing a radio drama that is designed to provide both hope as well as real tangible skills that they can be using in their own communities to resolve disputes peacefully, for example, with nonviolence, how to better understand the other tribe, how to better work for gender equity. These are kind of our curriculum, but it's a drama, and it is really popular on the radio in South Sudan, has been in the past. So I should have mentioned that because it's been an exciting journey for us for five years of it now. And we're very lucky to have to be able to keep doing it.
So I just want to kind of recap, you know, for everybody listening, you know, you have this amazing Heat Speech platform, which is really fascinating to learn about, the COVID-19 Violence Tracker, the Road to Social Justice, the gala. Everybody should sign up for that. internationalpeacehonors.com or internationalpeacehonors.org, your accelerator program, the radio drama, and you know, getting involved in some of these trainings, perhaps. So, you know, I would say that, is there anything you'd like to leave people with today?
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't be the CEO of a nonprofit if I didn't tell you all to go to our website and think about how you can support these programs. Like, they don't happen on their own. You know, that's my job as a CEO, to try to keep out there pitching and getting the funding going. So yes, first and foremost, I want to leave everybody knowing every dollar you give us goes to one of these programs that Rosemary just ran down. You know, and believe me, you will be gratified in doing it. So that's one of the first things I want to say. The other thing, Rosemary, you know, people hear me say this all the time. We are living in an unprecedented time when every one of us has, with a push of a button, can send money, can send ideas, can send information around the world. So we all have the power of Peace Tech. Mm-hmm. And let me leave you with this one story. When we were in Mumbai, we were approached by a group of 13-year-old girls. 13-year-old girls who had worked with a mentor and a shared laptop to design a mobile app. You push one button to counter gender violence in their lives and in their community. You push one button, sounds a loud alarm, sends a message to their network, and it locates them. These are 13-year-old girls in the Dharavi slums of Mumbai.
Wow.
So that's the way of the future. These are the people we want to be able to support. You can download their app. You can send money through us to organizations like that. There are many ways that we all have the power of Peace Tech. And it's really worth thinking hard about that, which, by the way, in the next year, this coming year, I'm excited about creating a toolkit for everyone to be able to leverage the tools at their fingertips for peace building purposes. That's going to be an upcoming project of ours.
Awesome. So I have to tell you, Sheldon, you're incredibly inspiring, and you have provided some incredible insights today. I look forward to seeing you continue to, I would call it architect and engineer peace. And just to leave everybody with a couple of the more nuggets that you mentioned, always think about the social good you can create. It's very gratifying. We all have the power of Peace Tech. And you're going to have Peace Tech at your fingertips this year, right? 2021.
Absolutely.
And I'll just leave. I wouldn't be the CEO either if I didn't say go to, if you're doing work for social impact and you want to raise money, or if you're an investor who wants to invest in social impact, go to ignitesocialimpact.com. And thank you so much, Sheldon. This has been spectacular. You really are.
Rosemary, thank you so much for inviting me. You're incredibly gracious, and just keep doing this great work that you're doing. I really am a huge admirer. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Take care. Have a good day.